Welcome to the Open Mic Comedy Podcast. I'm your host, Mark. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. This podcast is here for people on the open mic comedy circuit, whether you're a comedian, an MC, a promoter, a tutor. In fact, anyone who has any involvement in this crazy industry. Even comedy fans who really do enjoy spending their time in pub basements watching the possible stars of the future. And if you're thinking, I could do that, then this podcast will give you the inside track on what to expect on this crazy circuit. Today's guest is someone who has taken their art onto the stage, allows herself to be exposed, and once you've listened, look at some of her Instagram reels. I don't think I've ever seen someone so joyful in showing off her art whilst mixing it up with stand-up comedy. She's also a creative and confidence coach, and she doesn't shop organic. Please can you welcome to the stage, Beth Knight. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. Don't shop organic.
That's good. That's a little inside joke. If anybody's seen the set, they'll know.
But it is actually a truth. I don't shop organic. I just shop whatever's in front of me.
So how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm good. But so what is, I guess your primary skill was art.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
I like to think of myself as a painter first who like does stuff.
Yeah.
Painter who does stuff. And the one of the things is stand-up comedy, which I absolutely love it. Yeah. So that's how I met you on the open mic circuit.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So so I guess, how do we break this down? Is it, so art's always been there.
Art has always been there. I moved to London as a software developer, but before that I was a painter. So I'm doing like dog commissions or whatever out of San Francisco. And then I wanted to make a bunch of money. So I joined tech and I did, it worked. And I got to live in London. My soul was kind of dying. And I started doing stand-up comedy back in 2019. Like, I took my first course.
Okay.
Yeah, like towards the end of 2019. I saw somebody in a pub doing it, and I was like, well, that's so cool. And I've always had massive stage fright, but I've wanted to be a public speaker. So it was aspirational. And like my initial goal was, because I was in the tech world, I wanted to be like one of those TED Talk people.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Where you're just like inspirational.
Yeah.
But like the more I got into comedy, I was like, I'm not inspiring. Right. Where you're just like, I think we all get it. like have good habits. Okay. I wanted to stand on a stage and like have people look up to me, I think. Like revealed in therapy. So anyway, I was doing stand-up comedy to get ready for tech talks because they wanted us to give engineering presentations at work. And I was like, oh, mother of God.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way of getting into it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it was just a way. I took a class and it was a comedy course. My first one was at the comedy school back in 2019.
Okay, yeah.
And then we had our final show at the backyard. And I was like, oh, I'm off to the races. I'm going to be amazing. And then COVID.
Yeah, I was gonna say, when you said 2019, I'm thinking this is, I can see where this is going.
Yeah, because I wasn't painting at all during, when I was a programmer. I mean, I paint every now and then, but I kind of like lost the taste for it because I was just doing so many commissions before I was a software developer. I kind of had this realization. I was like, I'm just going to sell myself out. I want to sell myself out well. And I lived in San Francisco and I saw people make a bunch of money in tech and I was quite greedy.
Yeah. Well, you've got to look after yourself, isn't it? If the money can come in and it allows you to do the stuff you really enjoy, takes the pressure.
It didn't really, though. That's the problem. We were talking about that earlier. Like doing a really like a cognitively taxing job, like programming, made it very hard to do creative stuff. So at the end of the day, you know, you just want to hang out with friends and like shoot the shit and chat, which worked really well with comedy.
You're not harvesting material all the time.
Yes. Yeah. So I could do that, but like to paint, you have to really focus and it's quite an effort.
Yeah.
I just really shaded comedians there.
Oh yeah, comedians just talk, but painters need focus and everything going on in front of them and stuff.
Yeah. I think when I paint, I usually have like a TV show on in the background. I'm so full of shit.
So COVID hit, and then it was a case of getting back into it again. Because I guess, COVID was before I really even thought about any kind of comedy. So I don't actually know what it was like trying to be an open mic comic at the time.
Well, I didn't even try because there were some Zoom meetings and they had like Zoom COVID, and I was like,
no,
because what you would do, and it was such a painful time because you would tell a joke and everybody would be muted. So yeah. It was just like, there's no reaction.
Yeah.
So you're just like, why?
Yeah.
You'd have to have so much like self-reliance on like, yes, this is a good joke, or like really read people's facial expressions.
Yep.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who got like big on TikTok and like their podcasts and everything for that reason.
Yeah.
Everybody was at home consuming media, but that's not really what I wanted to do. So there are bits where COVID kind of let up and I tried a few gigs, but it took me years to get back on stage just because I lost my confidence.
Okay.
Yeah. But what happened was I started painting again because I did COVID. I was self-isolating. Not self-isolating. I mean, I lived by myself, so I was just, yeah. You know what I mean? So I was just like, wow, kind of having a lot of like come to Jesus moments. It's like from Oklahoma, we use terms like that. I'm not religious, but like just kind of usually I would run around to stay busy, and I couldn't do that anymore. So I ended up getting like a lot of therapy, a lot of crying, a lot of drinking, and eventually I started using my painting as a way to like handle all the stuff that was coming up.
Yeah.
So I had this incredible body of work that came out of it, and I was. And then when, you know, fast forward to 4 years later.
Yeah.
I can't believe it was 4 years ago. But I have this body of work and I was doing comedy. I never thought to mix the two.
Yeah.
But I think it was about a year ago, April. I was like, I want to get back on stage. I want to do it. And I have this painting of me crying. And yep. I took it with me to my first gig, and I just sat it behind me and I told jokes, and I was like, I think it'll be really funny if I just have a crying painting behind me and never acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And people were like, what the fuck? They're like, we just wanted you to talk about the painting. And I was like, no, I was just fucking with you guys. I just wanted you to be like, look at the, I don't know what I was thinking. I just wanted to tell my jokes. They were quite bad because I hadn't done comedy in ages. And I, you know, I was reading off a piece of paper, but I just wanted to really kind of like mess with people with my art.
Yeah, I think it's, I think you're fairly unique in that, in terms of you see prop comics as such, but this isn't prop comedy.
Yeah, no.
This really is mixing one artistic skill with another artistic skill and just mashing them together on a stage. I've never seen it before. And I think it's quite a, it makes, I think as a, I guess on a personal level, for being a straight, white, middle-aged man, you get mixed up in everything. You don't stand out. But with something like that, what you do, everyone will go home remembering your act.
I saw people who were like, you brought that crying painting and you never talked about it.
Yeah.
I was like, that was a year ago. They're like, why did you bring the painting?
But yeah, it's having that different thing that makes you stand out, makes you memorable. And I always think it's when you, especially on like this circuit, whenever I speak to somebody and you can see in their eyes, they're looking at you going, I know you, but I can't think where from.
Uh-huh.
And then you see that person do their set, and then all of a sudden it's like, yes.
Yeah, 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 their jokes. Like, I know people's jokes and not their names.
Yeah, it's terrible, but there's so many of us around, especially on the London circuit. But to go there and go, you're the painting lady.
Yeah, I guess
and
so
straight
too.
Away, without saying anything.
I do. There's part of me that's like, is this a crutch? Because I did. This is terrible. I went to Manchester and I did this gong show, the Frog and Bucket. And I took a train and I got like a hotel room and I was like, I got gonged off in like 2 minutes, but I got to show my Rishi Sunak painting of a penis, and that went really well. But then I fumbled. I was like, wow, I really put a lot of money into this.
Yeah.
But the guy, the MC, who was this really funny comedian, he was like, your shit is stand up. You're just, your painting's on a punchline. I was like, oh. That was like, well, that was a heartbreaking journey.
I think it was, I mean, that's when I referenced like the introduction, the joyfulness. I've never seen somebody jumping up on stage, pure happiness that you got to that part.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh yeah, that's what this is about. It's about having fun and maybe getting a message across if you want to go that way. But I think at one point you said, I've done it. I've got that out. You can now get rid of me, or you can gog me off or something.
Yeah, just like... I did because I got that video. I was like, you shouldn't need that video. I paid a lot of money for that 2 minutes because I got like, they laughed. They also clapped. And I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And then I was done because I was like, I don't know what to say now. I started strolling.
I think that was, that was one of the videos I was looking at like your Instagram wall, and I was just like, no, that's just pure joy.
I was really happy because there was no grace period. So they were gonging people off in like 20 seconds, and I was towards the end of the night, and I was just like, what have I done? I have to show this painting right away.
Yeah.
Like, I have to do it straight away because I could be off. And it's like, I took that painting all the way from London, like on the train, sitting next to me.
I loved it. I loved that bit. It just made me really smile. So does that go down as one of the best moments on stage for you?
That was a horrible moment. Because I still got gonged off right after.
Yeah, I guess so.
And then I was so like butthurt about it that I like stormed out and back to my hotel. I didn't like hang out with everybody. I was like, I get so, my very fragile ego. I don't think the gong shows, there are some people that love them, and I don't think what I do does, it translates well.
No.
But I also want, you know, everybody wins stuff and I don't win anything. And I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
I want to win something.
Yeah.
You're like, why? I'm like, I don't know. Because everybody wins something.
Yeah. I used to have a tagline in one of my like posters that I used to do for, I still do, for monthly gigs coming up. And one of the taglines last year was the only comedian not to have won the mini plastic trophy at Comedy Virgins.
Yeah, I've never won that either.
I'm not the only one. I can't change it. One of two.
Yeah. Well, I don't win anything. And I'm like, come on. Even like in the portrait shows, I get to like the final round and then they're like, no. Like, fine.
So what is your best moment on stage?
Well, I mean, I love every little night. I love those little nights where it's just like your friends hanging out and you get up there. I love those. I really like, I mean, there's the big rooms, like Angel Raw is a really great night. It's hard to get a spot. But I've done that one like 4 or 5 times. I really like that one.
Wow.
Yeah. So I won something. I really enjoyed that night. I'm trying to find more nights that have projectors. I think that's what I would like to move to, is to be able to like sort of like, I print out the photos and then I show it, and you know, I have to like, I cycle out to all these gigs. So I have to like put it in a backpack and
it's, yeah.
But I would love to do stuff with projectors, and I haven't figured out how to do that. So there's a night called Freedom Fridge, which for the longest time I thought was Freedom Fringe.
Okay.
It's like a refrigerator, and it's in Kentish Town.
Yeah.
The guy who runs it, he does PowerPoint comedy. And so somebody told me about it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've tried that a few times, and you've probably been to it's where the shtick is as well. The same pub.
Oh, okay. I've never done shtick actually.
It's the best murder basement comedy. And like, if you go in that room, you're just like, what? And it's actually, it's so funny because like when I was doing comedy back in 2019, I remember that room. They haven't changed at all. Yeah. I really do like it up there, though. That's it. I like the small little weird rooms that you end up in. I love that part. Maybe, but I mean, I haven't done a bunch of big successful rooms, so maybe I would also love that, but we'll never know.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a few nights I've seen that have like a TV screen on in the background with the comedian's name on when they're on stage.
Oh yeah, queer comedy is a good one for that.
Yeah,
I've done that one. That's a nice, like, warm, welcoming room. I think I'm finding more rooms that are just warm and welcoming.
Yeah,
because I think there's, what's the point, you know? Like, there's hard rooms, and the worst rooms are the ones where it's just like your other comedian friends, somebody there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all just waiting for you to get off the stage so they can talk.
Yeah, I'm here to do my bit, not listen to you.
Or they've already heard your joke like 1,000 times, and they're like, okay.
Yeah, I can see that, but I'm still an advocate of, especially if you're relatively new and you're still on this open mic circuit, is that paying attention to other people's routines can help your own routine.
Yeah. Well, I've seen, because I've been doing it now for almost a year, and I've seen people get, because I've been doing it alongside people.
Yeah.
You kind of find like a group where you see people pop in. Usually there's some people that try it a few times and they disappear, but then there's people who hang around, and I've seen people like really like take off to the stars.
Yeah.
Get really good. And you're like, good luck on your show. I knew you win. So that's been really cool, like watching people get better alongside you. I forgot where I was going with that.
Yeah, I think it's hard in a, it's kind of a competitive industry. It depends on, I guess, the type of person you are. If you want to win every gong show and every little competition you enter, it becomes hard to put a, and you don't win, and you, it's hard to get your mind in the right place.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And I've done like competitions where I've come off stage and I thought I've nailed that. I've done really well. I think I've got a chance. And then everyone after you just smashes it one after one and you sit there demoralized.
Yeah.
But then somebody comes up to you and says, I've seen you 5 times and that was the best I've ever seen you do.
Oh.
And you're kind of like, okay, that's a win.
Yeah.
I might not have been good enough to beat these other 15 people, but somebody has seen me do something and got better.
Oh, that's really nice. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah, you should have voted for me.
But that guy's joke was really good.
Yeah, like, right, and it's like, when you, I do think, like, I'm not going to be, because I've seen, like, that super really good people. I've seen that thing, and I don't think I have that. But I do think the direction I'm going, I can be the best at that. I don't think I have whatever it is that those, that magic, because I've seen people with that kind of magic. And maybe I'm calling magic like bazillion hours of hard work where you're like, oh, they just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, some people think that I started painting like during COVID, and I was like, no, I was a painter before. I didn't I have my master's in it. It's took a decade to get this good.
Yeah.
And I just now I do concepts that I like, but it's not like, oh, is this a paintbrush?
Right? Like, what color, like, is this one?
When, how does, wow, I'm just really good.
No, I have great admiration for people that are good at art. My mum was quite an artist. She used to sit in she had a little studio made in a spare room in the house and kind of just go up there and just paint and go like, what do you reckon to this? You're like, no, that's really good. Really good. And she's like, you should give it a go. I'm like, My artistic skills went as far as when I was like 6 years old, drawing things out of shopping catalogues and copying the pictures.
Yeah.
It's like Star Wars characters when you're 6 going, okay, I'll draw that. And you kind of go, it always came to the same point with me, is she would always say to me, you can't draw humans because you can't draw their hands. It just turns out like a bunch of bananas. And it's just like, No, that's a fair point. It's a fair point.
Banana hands.
Yeah.
Well, that's not very nice of your mom. So nobody naturally knows how to draw hands. No. Also, by the way, they're really very difficult.
I think she was trying to steer me away from drawing humans.
Yeah.
Just draw the robots. You're fine at them.
I did have a mom who was like, you're so creative and talented at this. But I mean, I think I have the idea that I don't have kids, but I think you can kind of train kids in whatever direction.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, wow, you like math and science. Like, you should like football. Yeah, so I did grow up with a very creative mother. But I have two brothers and a sister, and my two brothers can't draw shit.
So. Yeah, it's definitely a practice element to it all, isn't there?
Oh, 1,000%. Because I remember going to, my mom was like, you're so good at drawing, and I went to art school. And they're like, no, you're not.
So... With comedy itself, so I assume you're primarily based around London.
Uh-huh.
And with the odd trip outside doing stuff.
Yeah.
Is there anything you'd in particular like to see change on the open mic circuit?
I mean, everybody wants Bringer Nights to stop, but it's only because it's a necessary evil, right? There won't be an audience. I was just complaining about a room full of just comedians. So I don't think there's any way around having a Bringer audience at the level that I perform at. Mm-hmm. It just sucks.
It's just, yeah.
Like having to like beg people to come with you. That's my biggest, because you know, some people are like, oh, it's so hard to get on stage. Like, no, it's really hard to find somebody to drag to the show to watch you perform for like 2 or 3 hours. You know,
yeah.
Like that's no small thing. But I really like the open mic circuit. I feel like I found my nights that I like.
Yeah.
Which probably, like, for, I don't know if that's good or bad. I am going to try going up to Glasgow for a few months to paint and, like, live, because I have, like, a little Scottish dream I want to pursue.
Okay.
So I'm going to try doing all this in Glasgow. And they'll probably be like, we don't know what you're saying. What? Your accent's so thick.
And that's when you get a mirror out and go, look at this.
Yeah.
This is what I'm seeing.
I really like Kevin Bridges, the comedian.
Yeah.
I've found the area that he kind of lives. I'm going to go rent a flat there to be like super creepy. Just be like, whoa, Kevin, are you here? What?
Do you need somebody to open for you for 5 minutes?
No, his rooms are big.
Yeah, I know. He's got to do some work in progress somewhere.
Yeah. I did do a show. I went to Barcelona. And this is, if you ever want like a little fun weekend, go to Barcelona. And there's an English-speaking open mic comedy club. It's just like the UK. I mean, it's just, you know, just sign up and you go. But they don't have a Bringer. They gave me a drink ticket. And I was like, what? Am I paid? You
know, I've been paid.
Is this paid? It was so fun, though. And they had a real crowd. And I found out later that Michelle Wolf lives in Barcelona, and that's where she goes to practice her material.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was like, we did the same stage.
Yeah. I think there's an appetite in Europe for open mic nights. There's just not a big enough circuit as such for
it wouldn't be. It would be that night, maybe another club, as opposed to London. There's just so many, and like I could hop on a night tonight. I mean, I'd have to find. If you get them when they're really desperate, they'll be like, you don't have to bring your fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to a guy that's currently out in Germany. He's primarily been over here, but he's gone out to Germany to work. And he runs his own night in the UK. But when he's over there, he was asking about open mic nights and stuff like that. And he's got himself onto one. And he said they sell out 2 months in advance for an open mic night.
Like they book the comedians or they book the audience?
As in the audience is sold out because there's such a lack of live open mic comedy there. As soon as it gets out, that's it. It's sold out. And he's walking into he's doing an open mic night in front of 150 people. And you're like,
what?
That's amazing.
Whoa. But how many nights?
Not many. That's the problem. That's like once a month, I think it is. You know?
Yeah. You can't, because like, to get better, you just have to. And I remember when I first started, they were like, you got to do like almost every night. And I was like, what crazy person would do that?
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because your friends are there. It's like super fun. Which is probably not the reason to do it. You probably should like hone your. I mean, I see people, they do their tens and then they move to another night and then they do their 10 and move to another night. And
yeah.
They're running all over London. Which that's, and you're like, where's your bringer?
You're on the tens circuit. You're all right. You don't need one. But yeah, I think if you're the sort of person that has the inclination and you have the time to do it, doing more than one gig a week and stuff like that is almost vital to improve at a decent rate anyway. I find it difficult because at the moment I'm one, maybe two at a push twice a week. Uh-huh. And it becomes really kind of hard to hone a skill because by the time you do gig number two, you've forgotten what happened in gig number one in terms of trying to improve it, change the wording, change your pace. Yeah. And you don't have that comparison because it's not that fresh in your mind.
I do use social media kind of to just like practice talking and like sometimes you just have to say words out loud and see and get a reaction. So you, because I don't think I'm nervous anymore. Now it's about like getting the words out in the right way.
Yeah.
And so I've been like, you know, I film myself saying stuff and I'll just throw it out there just for the act of like, do people respond to this? And if they don't, I'm like, okay, I'll delete it. Yeah. Which I don't know if that's like a great way to do it, but it's, I really enjoy it, as opposed to like having to run around London waiting for my 5 minutes.
Yeah,
it's an instant way to like I can talk and create a whatever persona and hone a joke. Because I used to just write it. You know, you write it on paper, you go on stage, you kind of like fumble through the words, and you're like, well, this is a slow process.
Yeah, you have to be. I think you have to be disciplined in. And you have to be able to hear what you're saying as well. Because I think I do this thing when I'm sure lots of other people do it. It's when you go out, you take a dog for a walk or something. And I think I've got a gig coming up tomorrow and I start running through it in my head.
Uh-huh.
Like running through your head's not good because your head and your brain doesn't make the mistake that your mouth's going to make.
Yeah.
And you're not training your vocal cords in your mouth to actually say the words in the correct order. In the way you want to say them and you open your mouth in a clear, concise way, whereas your brain's going, this is perfect.
Yeah.
You should be on stage in front of thousands.
But if you just record yourself and then play it back, you can. Mm. That was also a thing I had to get over was like seeing my face and hearing myself speak.
Yeah.
Like I'm so used to it now, but like when I first started, I would be like, hope they like it, bye, run.
Yeah.
And then you hear your voice and I think my voice is a lot lower. And then you hear it and you're like, oh, because the way you hear your voice is different.
Yeah.
Somebody said if you do this, it's how you actually sound.
Okay. That's an interesting one.
But now I'm used to my voice. I'm used to like seeing what I look like and they're just like, that's fine. But that was quite a mind trip to get over.
Because
you're not used to that much amount of attention on yourself and like that. Especially you.
It's a weird one, especially I don't know how you found it when you've done a couple of gigs and people say, oh, you've got any videos I could watch? And you go, yeah. And it's that nervousness of handing it over going, I've watched this once. Uh-huh. I know what it sounds like and I don't like what it sounds like because it doesn't sound like what I think I sound like.
Yeah, you're like, I was clearly... David Beckham or whatever. Actually, the worst person I could have picked. He's got the worst voice. I was like, who's a handsome guy? And I was like, I think the handsome guy with like...
squeaky voice.
Oh, who's a better... I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. Morgan Freeman.
Freeman. Yeah, that would be really cool. But it's so vital to... watch it back and like see it and like analyze it like you would have like the football player would analyze you know, a play and treating it like that and taking out the whole I need to I hope people like me, but you know, like you need to like look at the joke itself and I heard that actually recording yourself with your video is detrimental to that because you're so focused on what you look like.
Okay.
Yeah, And I was like, tough luck. I like posting videos of myself now. But if you just do the words and record just the words, then you can focus on where the laughs are and like the,
yeah.
Yeah. And that just being really scientific about it and taking away like all the inhibitions around the self-consciousness.
Yeah. I think there's also the, when you're listening back, and I think it's a good idea to try and transcribe what you said in some way and then try and work out, do I need these words? Do I need this? Because I think what a lot of us, certainly myself, when I started, you know, my first 5 minutes on stage turned into 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because of constant laughter that I had to keep pausing. It was just I was using too many words and you don't get it. And when you're limited to the 5 minutes, the last thing any promoter wants you to do is go over. So you need to be concise with what you use.
Yeah. Not just the 5 minutes, it's just you're boring people.
Yeah. It's true.
You're just like, they're like, where's my phone? I just want to play on my phone. It's pretty, yeah. You know, you're like, get to the point. Like, get to the point.
We're here laugh.
There is a difference, I think, between American comedy and British comedy, and there's more storytelling in British comedy. Like, there's more, like, they can go without a laugh for a longer period of time. But in America, I feel like it's like, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah. No, that's actually interesting. So, comedy, did you ever see open mic comedy in the States?
I would go to regular comedy all the time. I mean, I didn't do it when I was in San Francisco. I guess there was a circuit in San Francisco, but I never saw it. And then, because I was painting, and I always had to go to my friend's stupid improv shows. I hate improv. I hate it so much. Or maybe I hate amateur improv. Like, I love to watch the show Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
That was brilliant. Yep. And I go see my friends, and you're like, not even close, guys. Yeah, that was very bad. So, if I could go back in time, because I think there was a small little community in San Francisco doing stand-up at the time, which they were quite cool people. I was in too many creative communities. I really wanted to, like, go work at Pixar. That was, like, a big dream I had that I've given up.
Oh, okay.
They want to be an animator. They all kind of say, like, because I spent a lot of time with animation people when I was in San Francisco, and they're funny as fuck. They're so funny. And so they're just as funny and clever and goofy as the comedians. And so I think I get a lot of that out of the comedy scene right now. Like, I feed off people's creativity.
Yeah.
I really like surrounding myself with clever people.
Yeah. It's quite good when you see how people live on stage can come up with things.
Oh, I think, were you there that night? There was one guy, it was Will Burnett. Last in the Lane. He just gave, for 5 minutes, he just gave alternate titles for Sister Act.
For like,
Sister Act 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But he just, I was like, you can't do that for 5 minutes. And he did. That's really clever. And we were it was fucking hilarious. We were just like, what brain? Come up with titles for all the sequels to Sister Act.
Even the ones that don't exist yet.
Oh, no, none of them. I mean, because there's only two Sister Acts. He went up to like 16.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were all very funny. They're so funny. Because, like, Sister Act 2, I think, is Back in the Habit. And you're like, oh, what a funny title. Yeah, so he just kept going. But, like, that level of cleverness where you're like, good job. Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice when you see, I like the, when you have a comedian, I guess I try to be like this, is when you try to round off a story. I'm very much a storyteller as such. But a storyteller, I try to, rather than one big story, it's more sections. So I can take bits out of, I can take sections out and create another story, if you see what I mean. And I can still end up coming back round. I want to come back to the start again and round it off so that those in the audience go, that was quite well thought out. I don't know how he's got to that, but he's got to it. And it's reminded you of how you started your set.
Yeah, like a callback, do you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Getting those callbacks right, I think, is especially trying to do the storytelling part. Because I think if you do a story that just starts from A and ends in Z, it's just like, yeah, okay. But by the time you get to the last part, you've forgotten what the start was and how relevant the start actually may be. But if you can then do the callback and round it off.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a perfect.
Kind of clever.
Especially in a nice, like, it's a type five. Nice type five.
Yeah, I hate that word. I hate that phrase. It's a type five tonight. It's a type five. You can't go over. It's a type five.
It's a type five. It's a type five. It's really fun to use in like different contexts, though. Like, you go to the pub and you're like, guys, I'm gonna save for a type five, and then I'm gonna, and they're like, that's nobody knows what you're talking about. I'm like, I just love saying it. I'm here for a type five and I'm out.
Yeah, it's just that it does make me laugh when they go, it's a tight five tonight, we're on a tight schedule, et cetera, et cetera. And the MC doesn't stop talking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what nights you're talking about. I'm not going to, like, out them here, but there was one night I was at the guy tried to make a joke after every comedian, the MC. Mm. The night was, like, 4 hours long.
Yep.
And you're like, stop.
Yeah,
take the men's microphones, please stop this.
Yep.
I ended up like slipping out an hour early because you're just like, this is not like, you didn't think that through, because it was just like, eventually you have to. I love a good night where the MC, like 5-10 minutes, show's going to get started, starts the show.
Yeah,
like I did take a course at Comedy Versions about being an MC, because I thought, I know I'm going to try MCing tomorrow, Slap and Giggle.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I get like a, see how it goes. I just want to like dabble in all the things to see what I like.
Yeah.
But the MC course, the guy who runs it, he's the guy who owns Comedy Versions. He said, you're like a fluffer for comedians.
Yeah.
So you don't get the satisfaction of like doing your jokes and making it about you. Your job is to just hype up the room and make it a safe space for the comedians.
Yep.
And like run a nice night. It's not about you. And I think during that, I was like, oh, I thought it was a good way to practice your set. Like,
I've done MCing once, and I adored it. I came away from it going, I want to do more.
Yeah.
But it's like, the opportunities are, I mean, trying to get sevens and tens in London is extremely difficult. Trying to get an MC spot is virtually impossible.
You'd have to put your own night on.
Yeah, and I found that you have to have a certain level of being prepared with it. Trying to, how do I put this? You need the admin side of it. Learn the admin side of it is what I would always say. So, you know, phones on silent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Don't be a dick, et cetera.
Yeah.
Because I did that. I didn't do that on my... The night I emceed, I forgot the very basics from the start and just had fun.
Yeah. I'm sure the audience acted fine, right?
It was absolutely fine. There was actually no need to give a pre-warning of people, you know, don't heckle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the one thing I found really quite refreshing was that it gave me the opportunity to try stuff that I can't try at the moment because it doesn't fit in my set. I have lots of little ideas. I'm sure we all do. Lots of little jokes scattered around. They're only 20, 30 seconds long, if that.
Yeah.
And being able to throw them in at appropriate moments between acts, I thought was nice and refreshing to give them a go. And you could see what worked and what didn't work. And then you almost use it as a training exercise to find out if there's any bits that you've got that you think, yeah, this could work in the future. And how can I then incorporate that into what I've already got?
Well, my MC course said, don't do that. He's like, it's not your job to tell jokes.
No, but
it is whatever you want it to be. Because every night I've been to, every MC has done that, right? As a way to just like, I want to tell my joke. And I want to, as a way to like warm up the audience or whatever it needs to be.
It's also a way to, one thing I was doing some reading up on it was that it's your job to build up the audience, but it's also your job to bring the audience down. So if somebody's absolutely hoofed it out of the room, been amazing, you don't want the energy to be so high when the next person comes on.
See, that's,
in case
like,
they don't.
Don't you want it to be higher? That part I don't.
You want it to be, you don't want it to, what I'm talking about is that person's, the expectation on that next person is so high.
Yeah.
Because of what's happened before. So you try to bring the room down. When I say bring the room, I don't make it morbid. I mean, just bring it down a couple of levels. Take it from a 9 to a 7.
And I guess I've just never seen a person who brought the room down. You know what I mean? Like, I've never seen a comedian who's just been, everybody's like on the floor, like, ah! I've never seen that. Right. Because it's the small rooms and they just don't have that. I guess maybe in a big auditorium. I don't know.
No, I've seen it where somebody has absolutely just smashed it to pieces and you just think that was amazing. And then you look at the next person coming on and going, good luck. But your job as an MC, I see it, is that you bring that audience down that little couple of notches so that when the next person comes on, they come on at an even keel rather than at the height that they were at 30 seconds ago, is what I mean. So you bring the levels down. So everybody kind of comes on at a similar kind of level. Or you, if you're aware that somebody is fairly new to it, you bring them, some people you can manage their expectations in how they come on, because ironically, the night that I did, the person that was on first was a 17-year-old whose first ever time on stage, other than the showcase. And she said, I want to go first. I'm like, are you sure you want to go first?
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I want to go first. I'm like, fine. And before she went on, I said to her, do you want me to reference this is your first ever gig? Or do you just want to go clean? She said, clean slate, don't mention it. Okay. She went on and she smashed it to pieces. She was amazing. And when somebody said to me after, if somebody ever tells you, I want to go on first, they've got the confidence and they've got the balls to do it. So let them do it.
I like to go on first because I don't want to sit there and stew.
Well, that was one of the reasons she said was that
I'll just be sitting there the whole time being like, ugh.
Yeah. And it was one of those where she smashed it to pieces and I couldn't not reference it was her first time when she came off, but I didn't say it beforehand.
Yeah, but that helps because then people are like, oh, good job. Yeah.
And they were just like, wow, that was amazing. And it, you know, she had the best night.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
17, man.
I know.
There was one night I did where there was another, he was 19, but he was a YouTube star.
Okay.
Yeah, and there was like his second time doing comedy, but he'd been a YouTube star for 10 years.
Wow, stop it. I've just done the maths.
Yeah, but he's got millions of followers, and so he like sells out arenas and whatever. For Minecraft. I was like, I know. We're like, oh, because, you know, what is a new world, man? But he was very charismatic on stage, but in a way that I think he's a streamer.
Yeah.
So they're just used to like being like that.
Yeah.
Minecraft. I remember that comedian approached him after and was like, can I open for you? And he was like, no.
Jeez.
You're like, no. Too famous for this. 19, man. 19.
It's a strange world in that I don't know if I wish I'd found comedy years and years and years ago.
But he wasn't comedian, it was
yeah.
He's just used to speaking. He's used to speaking and entertaining people. And it doesn't necessarily mean, that's why I like the camera thing where you can just record yourself, put it out there however you want, because sometimes it's just the act. You just need to get it out of your system, right? And like build that confidence. And so I think social media is a great platform for like creating a persona and an identity and having people follow you.
Yeah, I guess I'm of the age where I look back and kind of go, what did we have? What was out there and stuff like that?
And to hoof it.
It was just, there was, you know.
There's a lot more gatekeepers, right? Because you had to like, you couldn't just do things. You had to, like, if you wanted to perform, you had to apply to perform or what have you. Now, like, I wrote a book. I published my own book. But it was, like, because I could. You know? Right? It wasn't like, I didn't shop it around for a publisher, though. I was just like, what? I have all the words. I remember I have a bunch of books. I just kept like looking at the book to see like how they made the book. And I was like, well, I need to put a, you know, a little thing here. And then you got to make a cover. And there's all these tutorials online. And then you just publish it. But like, there's no gatekeepers. And it's not like a good book or it's going to be famous or anything. But it's still like, you just do stuff.
Yeah.
Not necessarily good stuff. I guess that's the trade-off, right? Is that you may have more, but less quality. So buy my book. So bad at selling it.
I do think it's interesting how you bring up a point in that the modern day, you can just do stuff. Whereas in the old days, say the old days, even just 15 years ago, I guess, you know, you couldn't just go, hey, I'm going to do this. Just going down to when I got into comedy, it's like, how do you do it? I mean, how does somebody get on a stage and do it? And the course was obviously the pathway into it. But at that point, I didn't know a course existed for this kind of stuff until you start looking into it and you kind of go, ah, there's shitloads.
Yeah.
Which one do I pick now is the next challenge? Which one's starting soonest? Okay, let's go for it.
I do think it helps being in London.
Yeah.
Like, because I grew up in Oklahoma. This definitely was a thing in Oklahoma. And I lived in Colorado, not a thing in Colorado. And then I lived in San Francisco. And I just didn't even think about it. I had other hobbies, two hobbies. But I was in London. I saw them doing it at a pub. Like that's, I was like, oh, you can just do it?
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, comedy upstairs. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah. And then they're like, I was like, how do you do that? You're like, you just sign up. And you're like, what? Because I think it helped me to see people who were bad when I was starting.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're like, I'm better than that.
Yeah.
And then you get up there and you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh, this is actually quite hard.
Yeah. It's one of those things that's so much harder than anybody ever imagines. But once, I don't think it, if you pursue it, I don't think it takes very long for you to become comfortable.
No. And then you get to play. That's the, because as soon as you get to the point where you get to play is when it gets really fun.
Yeah.
But it takes ages to get to the point where you can just play and goof around.
Yeah.
It's like, at least for me, it was the stage fright was the first one. And then like learning how to write a joke. Because I used to just get up there and tell a story and they're like, where's the punchline?
You're
like,
yeah, yeah.
You're like, a punchline?
Yeah, no. I'm with you on that. It's that I can run through things in my head, go, this would be quite a funny story.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a hit. It just has the little things that go through it that are self-deprecating and, you know, there's no end. There's no revenge. There's nothing there that's going to go, rah. It's just words. And you kind of think, I'm finding it entertaining. My mate in the pub finds it entertaining. But will 30 people in a room find it entertaining?
Yeah.
Probably not.
And they might, if you just tell it in the right way, is what's fascinating. Because I think a really good comedian can really take any story and just kind of twist it in a way that it makes people laugh.
Yeah. So that brings us on to a common question I like to ask is your favorite joke.
My favorite joke.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be your best joke.
I don't have your any favorite best
jokes. Your favorite joke. How did you come up with it and how has it changed, if at all?
I really like my joke about, it's, for me, it's the joke about Banksy. Which I'm sure it's probably not everybody's favorite, but I like it just because I consider myself quite feminist and I'm a painter. So I have this joke that where it's, you know, like, what if Banksy was a woman? Like, Banksy sold a painting for 11 million pounds. And then whoever paid for 11 million pounds would be like, oh, it's a man prize. Damn it. Right. But I like it because it touches on an issue that I care about deeply.
Yeah.
But it does it in a funny way. And I would like to do more stuff like that where it's just like highlighting problems in a way that's like, oh, that's funny the way you said it, but that's the kind of direction I would love to start taking it, because I am quite an advocate for different things, so to like I think humor, the best person I can think of that does this is Trevor Noah.
Okay, yeah.
Like he brings so much humor to very difficult topics, And I think the way he does it is brilliant. And it's a way that makes people think, right? Where they're like, oh, because he said it in such a nice way. I'll consider thinking about this topic.
Yeah, I think there's a, I'm going to probably get this lady's name wrong. I think her name's Louisa Kaur. She's on the circuit. And she does a routine based around the gender pay gap.
Uh-huh.
And I think she starts off with something like, I'm only going to give you 70% of my time because that's all they say I'm worth.
Yeah.
And you're just like, it's just so clever in the way it's done. And
you have to be really clever about it too, because like it alienates people like straight. They're like, oh, this is just a feminist rant. And you're like, no. So if you can be clever about it. And I did, what I didn't realize about, because I always thought, I do think joke writing is very important, but I think the way you deliver it and your persona,
yep.
I didn't realize people were like, oh, you're charming. Like I was like, I'm a brilliant writer. But if somebody else said my joke, they'd just be like regular jokes. I don't think I'm the strongest joke writer, but somebody was like, you have like the way you deliver them and your charm. And you're like,
yeah.
Does that mean I'm shit at writing jokes?
Yeah.
Is that like the nice, like, you have a nice face.
Yeah, it's the whole, aren't you brave? It's like, oh, no. Don't say those words to me. That just means you've come along, you didn't like it, and you're trying to find something positive to say. Just say it was shit and let me know why it was shit, because then next time it might not be shit.
You have to listen. The only feedback you need is recording yourself and hearing where the jokes are. That's the only feedback.
Yeah.
Comedians usually don't, because I do it too, where somebody's really good, I don't have to go up and be like, you're amazing. I used to, but now I'm just like, nice.
Yeah.
Like, that was a really, but because I've heard them so many times. But maybe I should just cheer people on more. But you see them all the time and, you know, you hype up your girlfriends. But the best feedback is always going to be listening back and hearing where the jokes land.
Yeah. No, completely. Yeah. And trying to work out how many laughs you're actually getting per minute and stuff like that. And trying to work out the order things go. It becomes very technical. It's from the outside.
And also, that gets quite boring after a while. You're just, I mean, it is good to like hear it, but then sometimes you're like, isn't that like an art to it? Kind of like, you don't want to get too technical. And I get bored telling jokes.
But then when, I don't know if you've heard, you must have had this, is where you change the joke in some way. It's just a small way. It's moving a couple of words around or taking a couple of words out, and it works a little bit better. And you notice it on stage and kind of go, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I think there's a guy you had on the podcast, Adam Bloom.
Yes.
He looked at one of my jokes, where the one where I like reveal my naked painting and I'm like, I send news. And he added a line. He's like, you need to say these are taking forever to get here. And it's such a good line, because it's just like, I didn't even think that I was mailing them the paintings. You know, I thought I was sending them a picture of a painting. But it's so good to say like, oh, no, I'm painting the naked painting and I'm mailing it to them.
Yeah.
Because they asked for a nude. And like, that's such a funny concept. Yeah. Anyway, so it's little things like that. And you're like, oh, that made that joke so much better.
Yeah.
To be fair, he is a professional comedy writer.
He is a professional. But it is one of those where you start. This is what I mean, is that if you're an open mic comic and you don't stick around and you don't pay attention to other people's jokes, you're missing a trick.
Yeah.
Because there's just, you just see how some people develop and you start to champion them and you start to looking at what they do and why they're doing it and how they're doing it and to try and work out. I've seen a couple of people that there's a guy that I really enjoy watching, and he's just, every time I watch him, he gets better and better and better.
Yeah.
But I'm not entirely sure why. But there's something about him and the way he's delivering it. Somebody said to me, yeah, he's just slowing down.
Wow.
And that's all he's doing. He's just slowing things down a little bit. And I like, look back and you kind of go, why didn't I spot that? I'm not paying attention. I need to pay attention to these things a bit more. And you start to comedy is more, is not just about the jokes. It's also about the timing and getting that right. You can just do wonders with it, I think.
Yeah.
And I think as a open mic comic, I think some of us get scared. Well, I certainly used to, of silence.
No, silence is terrifying.
But silence can be so good in some ways, but it, when you're on the stage and you don't feel like you're getting anything back. And I had somebody come up to me after a show and said, did you see the guy in the front row? I said, yeah, the guy in the front row that didn't make any movement or didn't laugh.
Uh-huh.
He said, yeah, he wasn't physically doing it as in out loud, but every time you were talking, he was moving forward. He was leaning forward, intently listening to every single word you said.
Whoa.
I'm like,
laugh, dude.
Yeah.
Laugh.
Dude, give me something back.
Yes, yeah.
But it was like he was listening to the story and paying attention.
Yeah.
And he said, because when you get to the end of the set and everything comes together and people laugh, you then don't notice that one person who's now joining in, who's laughing the loudest out of everyone.
Yeah.
Because you've seen that distraction and gone, I can't focus on that person because they're not giving me anything.
Yeah.
Oh, so you look away and then it's like, bang. And he's like, no, he laughed the loudest out of everybody at the end. But uh-huh. he kind of conserved everything until you hit him at the end. You're like, oh.
Yeah, because you can run out of laughs.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I actually did a storytelling thing last night. I found a storytelling group.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was a different. There is a room of about 25 or 30 people, and I was like, an audience. I walked into a full room because I knew you get 5 minutes to do a storytelling. And I didn't really prepare anything, but I know what I wanted to talk about, and I filled up that 5 minutes pretty quick.
Yeah.
But it was a different, it was interesting not having, because that room, I didn't have to make people laugh. I did get laughs, but that was not the point of it. And the pressure is just off. And it was actually, it's so nice. And people said they like love the story, but you know, I was like, oh, you don't even have to worry about punchlines here. You can just tell your story and people.
Yeah.
And I it was just a room above a pub. I took my laptop and I was showing my artwork that way and talking about it. I forgot where I was going with that. Oh, just that, like the different way to get validation from an audience. Like I would get no validation, but they were like keenly intent on what I was saying, which I thought was, I was like, oh, that's good too. Because before you're just like, I couldn't handle silence also. Well, I guess I was talking the whole time.
Yeah, I find in myself, if I'm doing like the rule of three with three examples and I'm going through it, sometimes the first one's always very subtle. And I used to find that I would just go through them like at the same pace all the time. And by doing that, I never allowed the first one to breathe and it would get missed. And it's one of my favorite ones. But then when I now say it, I have like a deliberate 2 second pause.
Yeah.
And it's 2 seconds of silence, but then it's a quarter of a second of laughter because they've suddenly worked out what I've said.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, that's hit. That's what I wanted. You put people in that uncomfortable situation going, oh, and that realization. And then you can move on to some things that are more obvious.
Yeah. And the worst is when they don't realize it's funny.
Yeah.
And then you're just all sitting there uncomfortable. I was trying to do a joke about cancer that was dark, and I realized I don't want to do dark jokes. I don't have the stomach for it. I tried, and I was just like, and then I held the pause, and then I was just like, oh no, everybody's just wildly uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's such a, that topic is such a, I don't think people find it not funny, but everybody seems to immediately, as soon as you say the word cancer, it's like they're back to a place where they didn't want to be.
Yeah.
Because they've, majority of people have been affected by it in one way or another, whether it's themselves or family members, et cetera, et cetera. But it's one of those topics that I really want to joke about it.
Yeah.
But you've seen my routine and it doesn't go anywhere near anything as dark as anything like that. But there's been loads in my family and I lost both my parents to it. But I want to use that in a routine because I want to write a routine about them.
Yeah.
And that's a fundamental part of one of their lives because they had it for 25 years. And trying to work out how I can make that into a 5-minute thing while still being funny, still having a little bit of a shock to it, but not a shock that's going to make people feel extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, the premise I was going, because like, I have that whole body image stuff. And so my grandma did, she didn't actually get cancer, but she was dying. She's still alive, but she's dying, but she's losing all this weight.
Yeah.
And she's like, I finally lost the weight.
Yeah.
And you're like, and then you're like, Grant, and I had to make it my aunt. Cause if I said it was my grandma, she's really happy. People are like, she's dying. Like they knew right away. But if it was my aunt did have cancer and she did lose a lot of weight. And that's like a thing that women have to do is like, yo, I'm finally skinny. Yay. And you're like, you're dying. You get cancer. That was like the premise that I tried to make funny. And I was just like, this is not working. And I still think it's a good premise, but I don't want to. I lost the stomach for the dark cancer jokes. If I had cancer, I think it would have been easier to pull off.
Yeah, it's I think it's wanting to tell the story from somebody else's point of view that would find, like in that situation where you say, I finally lost some weight.
Yeah.
That has the, you hit them with this thing about cancer and people are like, you make that joke and you try to make it out that that joke has come from somebody with that condition.
Yeah.
I'm not joking about it. It's their way of coping with what they're going through.
And they legitimately were happy that they lost weight. And because that's, I remember just being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? you're dying. you're dying and you're so happy. Like what? But like, it's just, it was kind of like highlighting the point that people are so obsessed with, or at least women, of just being thin that it didn't matter if you were dying. So maybe I'll shelve that joke and make it work somehow later. Because I do see, I do like it. It's just hard to, I think if I had had the cancer, it would have worked.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I look so amazing now. I'm dying. Yeah. So those dark jokes, they're hard, man. They're so hard.
Yeah. You need the right audience for that as well. And an audience that's willing to come along on that journey. If you've got an audience that's suddenly all like, oh no, defensive time. Don't just go back to telling dick jokes or something. Don't pursue it. Just don't keep smashing into it. Work out how to start that routine differently that may not get the defensive modes up.
Yeah, I do. So when I do, Palmer is not coming. When I do jokes, I don't usually have like a long story. Like what I did last night, it was a long story. I usually just, I'm like, this is a funny minute.
Yeah.
This is a funny minute. And then I interchange them.
Yep.
Sometimes I weave them together. So what I like to do is, you know, swap in a joke or two.
Yeah.
Like if I'm trying something, like add it in somewhere in the middle, like the cancer joke. But I know people who make their whole 5-minute set and there's no way you could do that.
Yeah. That's why I work in sections, because then I can take things out, move things around. And if I end up with a, because the way I've structured everything I have is I've got 2 5-minute sets, but you can create 1 10 out of that.
Oh, nice.
Because they're all little 1-minute sections in each one. And then I can interweave them and expand on what I need to do. But you getting those 10 spots is so difficult. It's kind of hard to get the practice to then.
Have you ever tried the backyard knockout?
No, I applied for that and got politely refused.
Why?
I got politely told, maybe you should try one of our new act nights first.
Oh.
But that was cool. That was cool. I was happy with that.
The new act, I thought it would be harder to get the new act night.
I don't know. I mean, I saw they were advertising for Comedy Knockout start this year. And I just said, hey, this is me.
Yeah.
This is the video. I'd love to give it a go. Let me know.
Yeah.
And the guy replied back straight away, said, I think you might be more suited to the new act night initially. I was like, okay, that's cool. I'll do that one then. He said, I've got a date in February. Come along. All right, done.
Oh, did you do it?
Yes.
How was it?
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's a proper club.
paying people. Well, no, actually, it wasn't paying. It was free night, but it wasn't bringers, and there wasn't any of that. But yeah. The thing with it was that I went into this with my brain in gear going, I am not going to mess this up. Do not mess this night up. It's not an opportunity, but it's a chance on a stage in front of an audience that's not open mic as such.
Yeah.
And yeah, I forgot the last section.
Of your joke?
Yeah, of my whole set that was supposed to round everything together. I got it back. And yeah, I'm on stage going, oh, because I don't know if you remember, there's part of my set, it's talking about being old and forgetful.
Uh-huh.
And I played on that.
Yeah.
And then when it came to me, it was like, hey, I'm back in the room kind of thing. And somebody came up to me after and said, I really loved your set. And I said, it would be even better if I didn't forget it. And yeah. She said, I thought that was part of it. I was like, perfect.
Yeah, and then you can add that in.
Yeah.
I write stuff on my hands, man. I don't ever, even if I memorize it, I have it on my hands.
I didn't for a while, and then I had to start putting, rather than putting like full sentences, I put like just single letters. So yeah, each like section,
you know what it is. So yeah. You're just, because it's, your brain just needs to like see, like, oh yeah, that's what's next. Okay. Yeah.
So it was a case of like, I would put P, B, and F on my arm, on my hand, just that. And it stood for P, brain, and fashion.
Yeah.
And those are the three main sections. And it was just like, and
you never know when you're going to blank on stage, right?
No.
When you're just like, you just never know how your brain's going
to
work.
So another common question I like to ask, if you've heard this podcast before, is if you were to become super, super famous.
I am going to be super famous.
Sorry. When you become super famous.
Thank you.
In art as well as comedy, but on the comedy, we'll focus on that. And you get booked for your 20-minute spot at Live the Apollo in front of 5,000 people. What are you going to pick as your walk-on music?
Ooh. Oh, I'm really bad at music, man.
Is there anything that reflects what you are or what you think your routine would be? Or
oh, man, I didn't think about that. It'd probably be something like upbeat, like She's Walking on Sunshine.
Yeah, Katrina and the Waves.
Yeah, but like, there's no deep reason. I like a good vibe.
Yeah.
I like to dance too. So like, it'd be fun to like, I wouldn't walk, I'd dance on stage.
Yeah, I can't badly. Dance.
I can't dance. I like to dance. I will preface this, I have no idea how. And I'm also highly uncoordinated. So it's more of like the shimmying kind of, like you're just wiggling.
So what's the on back onto like open mic, if somebody comes to you who wants to give this a go or has just started, what kind of, is there any one single tip you'd give someone?
Actually, all the storyteller people last night, they asked me how they would do stand-up comedy, so I had this question last night, and I think taking a course was like the biggest thing that helped me.
Yeah,
because first, I just love classes. I love classes. But like, you get to start with a bunch of people that are also new.
Yep.
And it's kind of like a sheltered, safe space to just write jokes and be bad and, you know, kind of cheer each other on, which I think is really important when you're first starting. Like, you have to be really protective of yourself because it's daunting, right? And it's really hard to do. And so don't go to gong show your first one.
Yeah.
Unless you're just a very confident, you know, 19-year-old YouTuber. I'm still friends with all of my classmates.
Yeah.
So we support each other. The girl last night that told me about the storytelling, she's from my class. She does more storytelling than she does comedy. But so you're making connections. That's really good too. Yeah, I would take a course. It doesn't even matter what course. I think they're all pretty good. They're just going to tell you how to like kind of write a joke and joke structure. And the most important thing is like to get on the stage in front of people and just say words.
Yeah, I think that the course gives people it gives them that they have to do this on this date. It gives you something to work towards, and it gets you up there rather than, I guess, if you're one of these people that walks past a pub that says open mic night, sign up on the door. Yeah. There's always an excuse not to.
Yeah.
Especially if you're that early on. But actually being able to formulate a joke and hear other people talk about jokes, like you say, in a safe space, I think gives you the confidence to understand what is funny to other people.
And it's fun to do it with friends.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you shouldn't have to just do it alone.
No.
Like, why should you? And the showcase at the end is really fun.
Yeah.
And you're all proud of each other. And that's the last time anybody will be proud of you. So, like, all your friends will come for that one show. and then they're officially done with you being brave.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, we get it. This is just now your new weird hobby.
Yeah. It's... I do think as well, as a sort of side tip, is that if things don't go according to plan, don't think that's the end. There's always another gig. And at the end of the day is that if things, the attitude I started to go into rooms with is, especially if I'm trying out some new to me stuff, is I'm probably never going to see half these people in this room again.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if that 5 minutes doesn't go very well. It doesn't mean the next 5 minutes isn't going to go well.
Yeah. On the flip side, you can't embarrass yourself badly in front of all your comedy friends and they'll be like, I remember one time.
That's perfect for a routine. Becomes your new routine, doesn't it? How bad you were at comedy.
Yeah. Remember when you tried to joke about cancer? That went real well.
Yeah. But then that's what would make the audience laugh at your self-deprecation.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've exposed yourself and, you know, I tried this and it didn't work and this is what happened. And yeah,
there is a new, this is out of left field, but a thing that I'm seeing more from 2019, you know, my little few times doing it to now, people like to record audience interactions and like post it on social media for like views. And I was like, that's new. And like engaging the audience more.
Yeah.
As a way to get a social media following. And I was like, this is a different ball game, I think. I just felt compelled to say that.
Yeah.
I think that's a different skill entirely.
Yes. I think that's a skill you'll learn with being an MC as well, talking to the audience.
Yeah. I just thought that was fascinating. And like having the cameras like right there to record it. And almost like baiting the audience for like every interaction that's like going to go south.
Yeah. I think it was, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said, if you see a comedian with their phone in landscape, they're recording it to analyze it. If they're doing it in portrait, they're doing it for clips.
I don't even know what I put in it. I just swipe in and go and hand it to a friend.
And I hope the friend can hold it still.
Yeah, yeah. When you were like, I can't believe I made somebody hold a phone for 5 minutes.
But is there when you say to somebody, please don't laugh too loud because it might get picked up on the phone?
Yeah.
And then at the end, they go, oh, it's all right. I didn't laugh at all. Fuck you.
There was a TV show I watched with Pete Holmes called Crashing.
Okay.
It's a show in America. I think it's called Crashing. Pete Holmes, you know, the comedian. It was on HBO or something, but it was about his, like he divorced his wife and then he ended up trying the comedy circuit and it was about the open mic scene in I think New York City, and it has him like flyering, but that scene where he's laughing over the girl's jokes and because he records it and he's laughing.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't hear anything. And that was before I even thought about doing stand-up comedy. It was like a seed was planted, but I was like, what masochist would do this?
Yeah.
Because you know? It's not a romantic version of it, right?
It's
you know, handing flyers out in front of a comedy club for maybe a 2 a.m. spot, which I've never had to go at 2 a.m. I think it's a very New York thing.
Yeah. It's the city that never sleeps kind of thing.
Well, they just put the shit people on really late.
Yeah, there is that.
these pubs close at 10 and 11.
Yeah.
Which is really funny when you're like, nope, it's time to go to bed.
Yeah. It's very weird how the UK has this. It's just like, that's 11 o'clock. That's it. We're all done.
Yeah, it's time to go home. We've been drinking since 3 p.m. What do you want?
Yeah, I can open the pub at 11 a.m., but I've got to close it at 11 p.m.
You've been the most responsible drinkers.
Even though I think actually pubs can actually apply for extended opening hours nowadays. Well, they have been for years. They never used to be. You could go to like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Because a lot of gigs, you know, they'll wrap up and then the pub's closing. So you want to like hang out with your friends and you're like,
go and get the tube then.
Yeah. You're like, okay, well, I guess you want to go to McDonald's? Which I really like junk food. I think I hung out more before. Now I'm kind of like, I'd like to go home. When it's early, when they let you off early, I think I did Comedy Bandits 2 weeks ago. This is a great night. Comedy Bandits is a great night. And it's grown a lot in the few years. But the room was so packed. And I went in the first half that I was like, you're not coming up. And I was so happy. You know, when you can just sneak out.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm nobody. They're not going to notice.
No, I do like Comedy Bandits. I like the, because they don't put lots of acts on. I think it's like eight, something like that, isn't it? It's quite a small number. And it's kind of cool and kind of intimate.
Yeah. Though when it was really light outside, it felt like I was just on the stage giving like a TED talk, because it's like fully bright windows in a big room.
Yeah.
And it felt like I was giving like a lecture. But when it's nighttime, it's different. But it's such a nice room.
Yeah.
I think a comedy club is, you should make it real dark, right?
Yes.
I guess you can do whatever you want. There's one of my favorite ones. I haven't done it in a while. It's Cuts. It's in the bottom of a barber shop.
Yeah, I've never done that.
Yeah, it's the bottom of a barber shop. I was like, well, what are we doing here? I was like, and then they have like a little bar, and you're like, is this legal bar?
Yeah.
I just don't ask questions. They even, like, one of the chairs is a barber chair that they've just got in storage down there.
Oh, okay.
You can sign up for it on Gig Gag.
Yes. Yeah, I keep seeing that one on Gig Gag. It's
really funny.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It's just an experience. I mean, it's a regular night, but it's kind of, this is a barber shop in Soho.
Yep.
And then the following night, it's like a drag night down there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's like when you do, I don't know, if you've done Big Nose comedy at Zebrano's.
Yes. Well, I've been a bringer.
So when I don't know how long ago you did it or was a bringer, but it's upstairs in the attic.
Yeah.
It used to be a couple of floors down, but now you go all the way upstairs to the attic. So you get there at 7 o'clock, you go to the bar on the middle floor, have a couple of drinks, and then go, I'll make my way up to the attic. So you go up to the attic, do your gig, you come out at 10 o'clock or whatever it is, and as you walk downstairs, it's like the Prodigy have just invaded the second floor, and it's now turned into a full-on nightclub that's banging away, and you're like, what? What happened in the 3 hours or the 2 hours I was upstairs? It's just gone nuts.
Soho's. I love all the acts in Soho. There's Hot Mess is a good one. It's a new night. My friend Molly runs that. You start to meet people, and like, I like to just see the people I know.
Yeah, Hot Mess. I met Molly. She was one of the acts when I was the MC.
Uh-huh. Oh, so, cool.
Yeah.
She's a tough old bird. No,
yeah, I get that impression.
Yeah, she's no nonsense.
Oh, yeah. I'm due to be speaking to her at some point soon as well, so it's going to be fun.
She's really fun. She's the one. She told me I should send, because I have that Rishi Sunak painting as him as a penis.
Yeah,
and I've put them on mugs. And she was like, "You need to send." No, somebody told me I need to send them to Nish Kumar.
Yes,
and I'm like, that's a really good idea. So somebody gave me that idea. I told Molly that. She's like, "Found this the number you send it to. Found the number you can text and send it to him."
What one place you should try to get it?
Oh, sorry, one second. He's here. Yeah.
Sorry, it's like
this. How about Bob is home?
Okay.
Yeah, so no, one place you should try to get the mug is on The Last Leg TV program.
What's The Last Leg?
It's on Channel 4's about 10 o'clock at night on a Friday. Uh-huh. It's got Adam Hills, Alex Brooker, and Josh Widdicombe on it. And they, on Adam Hills' main desk, he always has like things from the week that's like news items that might be like a cutout of a, I don't know.
The Last Leg.
Somebody who's been in the news. So there's going to be something this week about like the whole Kate Middleton picture scandal thing that's been going on. There'll be something on there. There'll be a Photoshop silly image on there.
Yeah.
And they're very much like Channel 4 is a very left-leaning kind of station as such. And it's they're very left-leaning in terms of their political views. And they make no bones about it. They're not trying to hide it. If you can get that mug on telly, I think it would be hilarious. And I think that's a sort of show that would welcome something like that.
Yeah. It's easy to send it. If I can find their number, I just send it to them. It's quite funny.
I think what might be a good start is to, I don't know if you could Instagram or whatever, The Last Leg, Adam Hills, et cetera, and all the people. Uh-huh. And send a picture and say, I want to send you one of these. How do I get it to you?
Yeah. Well, I just ask Molly.
Yeah. Well, she'll find and track them down.
She will. She's a girl who gets stuff done.
But it's also recorded in London.
Oh.
Live on a Friday night. So
just pop in and give it to them.
It's the sort of place where you would, it would go down well. Thank you for the chat today. It's been really good. I'd like to finish on my little niche that we have with the podcast. It revolves around this book, The Little Book of Shit Jokes by Sid Finch. If you've heard an episode before, you know what's coming. I ask every comedian to pick a joke from the page, from the book, to read out or put into their set, live on stage, record it, tag us, and all of that kind of stuff. There's a few out there already at the moment, which are quite fun to see. You get to pick a joke, but you don't know what the joke is until you pick it. And you pick it by page number, so it's random.
Wow.
So it could, bear in mind, the title of the book is very apt to the contents of the book.
Okay.
So we can
you
see.
Have to, you just do it like verbatim. You can't like tweak it a little bit.
You can tweak it as you want. So, for example, if the story says my uncle said this, and you do a bit in your routine about a brother, change it to brother. It's fine. It doesn't have to be word for word. However, you can get the rough gist of the joke in there. It's just for a bit of fun.
Oh,
so
cool.
You get to pick a joke from numbers 5 to 95. But if you do pick one that's already been picked before, we have to pick again.
About 37.
37?
I was kind of thinking this is a magic trick. And you're like, what is a picture of you on that page?
I like magic, but I'm not that good.
It's like G&B.
Do you want yours or do you want mine? If you've seen the card trick, you'll know that one. this page has two jokes on it. So would you like joke number one or joke number two?
Joke number one.
Joke number one. The joke I'd like you to read or put into your routine, live on stage, record and tag us in is, how did the hipster burn her mouth? She drank her coffee before it was cool.
Oh, I like that. Okay, I'll MC tomorrow. I'll put that in. How did the hipster burn her mouth? She drank the coffee before it's cool. I thought these were shit jokes. That's amazing. I'll be saying that all day. I'm going to go to the coffee shop with my Rishi Sunak mug.
Yeah.
Like, how did the hipster burn his mouth?
I like that joke, actually.
Yeah, because then I can use my mug.
Perfect.
How did
This is the really interesting thing about this is that when I mention this little challenge to people and they're like, yeah, I'm up for it. But then as soon as you say the joke, pretty much every comedian I've spoken to, their brain, you can see it's going, how do I fit that in?
Yeah.
What can I use it with? How can I make it seamless? How can I bring it? And it's, I think it's quite fascinating to see how people utilize these things.
I'm going to try to use it to sell mugs tomorrow.
Well, why not? Why not?
Always be hustling.
Brilliant stuff. So, no, thank you for your time today. It's been a lovely chat.
Yeah, it's really nice. Thank you.
Cool. And so where can people find you? And what's your socials and all of that jazz?
Well, the homepage for everything is mynamebethknight.com. That's like my art. It's all the stuff. You can find my socials from it. Mary.beth.knight is my social. Why? I should change that. If you're from Oklahoma, they put the word Mary in front of every name. It's a very Southern thing.
Oh, okay.
So like my really good friend Mary Ann, Mary Kay, Mary Carolyn. You're like, geez.
I'm starting it now. So BethKnight.com. That's Knight with a K as well, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm doing a thing. I've wrote a book and I draw people if they in exchange for a review. But you don't even have to read it. Like you can just be like, wow, I like the cover.
No.
If you buy my book, I'll draw your portrait.
So where do they get the book from? Is that on the website?
BethKnight.com. Yeah. It'll redirect you to Amazon. I did have a lady reach out and she was like, who has the options for this book? And I was like, this book? I was like, there's a few people. And then I had to go Google what options meant.
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah, BethKnight.com.
Cool. Thank you for the chat today. It's been a lot of fun. You can find us on Instagram at Open Mic Comedy Pod. You can find us on the internet on all the W's at openmiccomedypod.com. If you've enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes, please give it a nice 5-star review. Give us a follow on whichever platform you're listening to us on. And if you've got a friend that you think might find these useful, share it around. Let them know that this exists. And if you're a comedian and you want to get on, drop me a DM on Instagram and we'll see what we could do. Until next time, keep being funny on the stage. Thank you for listening and I'll speak to you all very soon.